What's going on, people? Welcome to Paint Points. As usual, I'm your host, Jake Painting. This podcast is proudly brought to you by the SB Nation Podcast Network and the Canis Hoopus family. Oh boy, the highs, the lows, the in-betweens of Timberwolves basketball all on show over the past two nights. The win against the Lakers blew them out of the building in Staples Center, and in Staples Center again the next night to play the Clippers in just an awful, awful loss, a blowout loss. I'm here with Jack Borman from Canis Hoopus, friend of the show, a man who has probably more optimism than me, but that's a low bar at the moment, and I'm not sure if he actually does. I'm just assuming. Jack, how are you feeling about the Wolves, and how are you feeling in general? How are you?
You know, the Wolves are the Wolves. The more things change, the more things stay the same with the Timberwolves. And I don't know if that's oddly comforting or, you know, or just a reminder that we are all insane people. yeah, but outside of that, you know, I'm good. There's a lot of fun stuff going on around the league. And now I have college basketball back. Just another thing to get in the mix with, you know, with getting a break from the Wolves, because Lord knows that that sometimes we need it on any given night. So, yeah, man, just very, very tough night. But, You know, you'll have those. You'll have those with the Wolves.
Yeah. How do you balance these two games? Is it closer to the Clippers game that you think this season is trending towards? Is it closer to the Lakers game being less of an anomaly and more of something that they can do regularly? Is it somewhere in the middle? Like, how are you feeling right now in terms of the Timberwolves' prospects after, 12 games and in general 12 pretty poor ones?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think it's tough to balance it because the Timberwolves looked so excellent last night defensively and just looked so terrible defensively tonight. Yeah. And I think, honestly, the Clippers are the worst matchup in the entire NBA for the Timberwolves. They're a team that plays very small, that crashes the offensive glass extremely hard. Has four players on the floor at all times that can get into the paint and kick out for threes. They're very unselfish. You know, and this is a team that shot over 40% from three as a team last season, and returning most of the guys that they had last year. And even without Kawhi Leonard, a team, and Marcus Morris shot over 50% on corner threes last year, I'm pretty sure. And not having either of those two guys, and still getting absolutely bludgeoned, offensively by the Clippers has been tough. So I think trying to balance that with last night playing against, you know, a group of old guys that's been, you know, going to LA Fitness for the last 15 years, it is tough because I don't think the Lakers are a very good basketball team. They're certainly not a good basketball team without LeBron James. And then when you juxtapose that to a very real basketball team that's hungry, that understands that they have to win as many games as they possibly can before Kawhi comes back, which thankfully for them sounds like it's going to be sooner rather than later. And the Wolves just don't have that same desperation. I think that's the biggest difference I saw, is that last night the Wolves looked like a very desperate team, and tonight the Wolves looked like a team that you know, that hit up James Harden for strip club recommendations.
Satisfied.
Bottle service recommendations. I mean, a team that looked like they just had no care in the world about coming out and playing basketball tonight. And that's a big problem, especially when you're 4-7 already. And you have the easiest schedule in the NBA and you're 4-7. So, I mean, that's kind of how I balance the two games.
The mentality is just atrocious right now. Like the standing up on the pedestal after you win a game, and the sleepwalking into a building thinking that you can just turn it on against anyone, and the Clippers for that matter, who I think last time we spoke I said that I don't believe at all in the Clippers, but I have watched them a lot this season, especially because they play the late games, which is good for me over here. And man, they're just a really well drilled basketball team. And like you said, the perfect kind of juxtaposition to this Timberwolves basketball team, which isn't well drilled. Like, it just shows you what mentality and what desperation to win and what wanting to be the best team every night really does to a team. Because I don't think they've got more talent than the Timberwolves. Not on paper. They certainly do mentality-wise. They certainly know how to win and have been in winning situations and understand that you can't just take nights off in the NBA. And the Timberwolves have taken multiple nights off already. And this is for a team that just cannot afford to take any nights off. I guess I've been getting criticism, but also kind of trying to plant my flag and let my opinion be known that I think that this is not on Cat, but like, man, Cat's performance tonight was just so disheartening. And it has been multiple times this season. I do think that if you do have problems with effort and with mentality and with, you know, desperation on the court, the fact that your best player isn't doing those, isn't showing that fortitude and is turning up to games like tonight where he didn't try in this game. I mean, that's straight up. He did not try. Like, there are problems that he can't fix. When guys are letting point of attack defenders are letting guys get downhill and play at him 2-on-1, that's not his fault. Like, he might look bad when a guy gets a dump off pass for a dunk, but like, when Ant and D'Angelo Russell and Malik Beasley are letting those guys walk past them, man, there's not much that Cat can do. But just, I don't know, it's almost hard to quantify in like a certain play or a certain time, but like Cat's demeanor and his body language right now is just really poor. And I thought maybe he had kind of got over that hill last night against the Lakers, but straight back down tonight. And to me, it's just so discouraging. And it really puts the onus on a bunch of guys who shouldn't have that much onus on them to make up for him. And he should be the ones making up for them. I don't know. I'm really down on Cat's effort right now. And I don't know what it is, but am I crazy? Or is this just a thing that you can see as well?
No, I mean, I can't tell you how many tweets I've written out and saved to drafts because I you know, that's just where I'm at. And I think too, when you look around the league, how many other teams' number one guys have taken multiple nights off this season already?
Yeah.
Cat has taken two games where he has just completely mailed it in. It was the Golden State game and tonight. He is
completely mailed it in. And that's 2 in 3 as well. 2 in the last 3 games.
Yeah. And this is a guy who a few nights ago, I think it was after that Golden State game, or maybe it was after the game last night, I can't remember, said that he takes every single Timberwolves loss extremely personally. He certainly does not look like it when he plays on the floor. When he gets punched in the mouth, he's been rolling over. And especially tonight, the onslaught starts. And what happens? Cat's moping around, he's barely running up and down the floor. He's begging for fouls, not just for him, but for other players. He's not hustling back on defense. I mean, the Clippers had 17 fast break points in the second quarter alone. 17 in a quarter. And you just can't have that. I mean, Cat's getting out-muscled, outplayed, out-rebounded by Ivica Zubac and Isaiah Hartenstein, who I believe was signed to a two-way contract before it was upgraded to a full-time minimum contract.
And bullied, man. Bullied by him. Not just outplayed, bullied by him. And bullied by him just because Hartenstein wants to be out there playing hard. It's not a novel concept.
I'm pissed, man. Yeah, I mean, Cat's been awful the two of the last three games. He was so great last night, and it was encouraging because it was an empowering performance where Finch started using Cat a lot more at the nail. I think I had something in my preview. I didn't post it on Twitter, but I clipped together five clips of Cat getting the ball at the nail and he scored in five different ways. He had a dribble handoff with Russell into a nice little roll. He had that nice little one-legged jumper over Anthony Davis, drove it at AD, had another one where he kind of backed Rondo down into the post and scored that way as well. And just did all the things that we know and love about Cat. And tonight you just didn't get that. And it is becoming really concerning to me how mentally checked out Cat looks on the floor when things go south. And you know, the first 3-4 games of the season, it looked like Karl Anthony Towns was going to have a second team All NBA caliber season. Mm-hmm. And now it's looking like, you know, he may not even have an All-Star season if he's going to keep mixing in these nights of just mailing it in completely. And Kat says he wants to be a leader. He takes pride in being a leader, that he wants to be in Minnesota for his entire career and lead this franchise out of the, you know, the shit pit that it's been in pretty much my entire life. I'm 23 years old and it's been in the shit pit almost my entire life. And then you get nights like this. You have his manager / best friend / social media guy, Chucky Anthony, just like acting like a clown on Twitter, just coming at guys for, you know, rightfully pointing out that Cat has not played up to snuff. And fans have every single right to be frustrated. And I don't want to say that Chucky is a reflection of Cat. But I mean, you know, Chucky is around Cat constantly and probably has, you know, many of the same sentiments and feelings, at least about Timberwolves fans, that Cat has. And a lot of the shit that Chucky's been saying on Twitter has not been very encouraging. Seems to make it known that Cat understands that Wolves fans are pissed. And instead of stepping up to the challenge like he did last night, just rolled over again tonight. And from your franchise cornerstone, you know, you just cannot have that. Can't have it. Maybe once every 10 games, you know, if you're just absolutely laboring and putting the entire team on your back and you need a break for one night, sure, you know, shit happens. Like, there's going to be nights where Steph is like 1 of 9 from 3 and like Jordan Poole goes off, you know. But the thing is like, The Timberwolves have had maybe 2 games this season, maybe 3 games, where all 3 of their best 3 players have played very well in the same game. And, you know, the supporting cast has been so unreliable that it feels like if any of those 3 guys have a poor game, the Timberwolves just have no shot at winning. And that's frightening.
Yeah. I don't know, because I felt like last season we got to see the makings of that trio working synergistically together. I think there was always going to be obvious kind of flaws in them, mainly defensively, but there was a little bit of high usage, you know, 3 guys with high usage, problems there. But this season it's just looked awful in terms of getting all of them on the same page at the same time. And like you said, like, Towns is the one who needs to be the most consistent. I get that it's a lot of pressure to throw on him. And like you said, like, you can have a bad game. I will never begrudge a guy for having a bad game. Ant has bad games. D'Lo has bad games. Every good player has bad games. You can't have low energy games constantly. That's the bar.
And I think there's a difference between having a bad game and a bad energy game.
Yeah, yeah.
And
Steph doesn't have bad energy games. Steph has bad shooting nights. He might score 15 points, and the Warriors might lose by 30. That's, like you said, that's a different vibe to one where even, like, sitting me at, you know, on the other side of the world, I can see that you don't even want to be out there. Like, that's not acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, it's a troubling thing, man. And the Timberwolves are only 12 games in, and they're only 4-8 right now. Like, they could very feasibly win, you know, 3 out of 4 at home.
Exactly.
And you're sitting at 7-9, and things objectively are fine, mm-hmm. right? Like, you're on pace to be, what, like, six, seven, eight games below 500. Like, that's pretty much right where Vegas has you for the season. That's what you were expected to do. But, you know, it's just that if you think about this season in the context of like being in March and looking back at games, because I mean, that's what I've been doing so far this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was pissed at the Pelicans loss.
Oh yeah.
The first Pelicans loss, because that team was awful, awful. And you look back, and if the Timberwolves could be competing for the, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 seat, you know, in that range, one game can make a huge difference. You know, one game has often been the difference between a 7 and an 8 seed, or a 9 and a 10 seed, or a 10 and an 11 seed in this new play-in format. And players have to understand that. You know, you can't be sitting here in November and saying, you know, it's just one night. We've got 70 other games ready to go the rest of the season. You can't have that. You have to treat every single night with the same weight. The games just can't be, you know, weighted more heavily as you get closer to the playoffs. Like, that just can't happen. Like, do you think, like, the Warriors, for instance, the Warriors are certainly treating every game with the same weight.
Yeah.
You know? They're approaching every single game the exact same way. And the Timberwolves are, you know, with their emotions and their energies, it's just so up and down as opposed to just being even keeled. And, you know, with a guy like Pat Bev that has been on, you know, this exact same Clippers team that, you know, that played exceedingly well in the playoffs last year, despite losing Kawhi, despite, you know, having all the shit that got thrown at Paul George. And they stayed even keeled. And it feels like with the Timberwolves, after every loss, it's the end of the world. And after every win, they just like made the playoffs. You know, it has to be so much more of an even keeled demeanor. And it's really tough when after you lose, you have one guy who is legitimately pissed off and feels like he can change things. And Anthony Edwards. One guy who, you know, frankly, feels like winning Zoom is more important than winning games, in Karl Anthony Towns. And then one guy who, you know, frankly, doesn't really give a shit about the whole media thing and his apathy, you know, off the basketball court kind of shines through in D'Angelo Russell, which is like, fine, that's his personality. But like, that's a dangerous mix for a team that's already behind the eight ball and needs to come back and galvanize. And and Towns certainly isn't going to be the guy that's going to be the galvanizing force. Thankfully, Anthony Edwards' emergence can kind of create that galvanizing player and aura and personality that this team needs. But right now, it certainly feels like you know, the Timberwolves are heading for no place that's good quickly, because even when you look at outside of the top three, there has been zero bright spots outside of the top three in Naz Reid. Outside of those guys, it's been awful.
Relying on Anthony Edwards to be your galvanizing force, as you say, is just such a dangerous game, because he's played, 84 games now? If he's the guy who has to turn this whole ship around, and he's going through his own struggles, kind of inconsistencies, which is normal, I think. And I don't want to absolve Ant from blame, because he does things that need to be done. Tonight, I thought he was pretty bad defensively, when normally he's been a bit better this season. He attacked the rim relentlessly, which I enjoy, but he couldn't hit shots, and I thought he got fouled more than the whistle blew. But I just think, like, the only teams that have rookies that lead them is teams that win 20 games. The reason this team was meant to be a team that didn't win 20 games is that Ant was meant to be, like, the sidekick to Towns. Now it feels like Anthony Edwards is almost the undisputed leader, at least off the court. On the court, he leads, but he's kind of still going through growing pains. As much as I think that he's gotten a lot better than last season, he still has his growing pains. And on nights like tonight, where Kat doesn't show up, D'Lo's been a complete kind of you know, face of inconsistency for the whole season. And within games can go from terrible to awesome, you know, at the drop of a hat. I don't know. It's just like, I just don't know how to get excited or to step down from the ledge about a team that feels like Anthony Edwards needs to play really well for them to win more often than not. And I know you can point to that Lakers game where Ant didn't play well at all. And they still won. But that's the whole problem, is that if you can't get that from Cat and D'Lo on most nights, like, then you need it from Edwards on most nights. And Edwards is less likely, I think, to produce at, like, this team-dragging level every night, because he's still so young and he's still learning how to be the guy. He wasn't meant to be the guy. He was meant to be the guy who could score 30 and not have all the pressure on him to do every single thing on the court, or else his team won't win. That's where the problem lies, that Ant can't be a second-year player. He has to be this grizzled veteran, you know, for the Timberwolves to have a chance to win, and that's a fucking bad place to be. It's a bad place to be. And I, like you said, it's early. I don't think that it's, like, unsalvageable. I'll never think it's unsalvageable, because I do believe that Towns and Russell are good players. We've sat here on many podcasts throughout the offseason saying what this team can be because of these guys. But I am just so shocked at how poor the way they've all synergized together in different games and the disconnect in the whole roster is just awful. I don't even know kind of where to go with it apart from that. It's just that there's no offensive players on this team. Like, outside of those three, nothing works, man.
Well, I'd say thus far. I mean, we have a significant sample size of Malik Beasley being a very, very serviceable offensive player. And he's shooting 30% from three right now. He's averaging 9 points per game. And, you know, when you look at what he did last season, I think he averaged 19 last year. You know, yes, Malik Beasley spent a good chunk of the offseason in prison. That's not something that can be rushed over. But at the same time, when you're that elite of a shooter, like, you don't forget how to shoot the ball. And that will come. That is something that I feel confident in, that will come. But outside of Malik, I don't feel like anything else is, like, a guaranteed, or not a guaranteed, but, like, a, I feel very strongly that this is going to come. You know, Jaden McDaniels, speaking of looking like someone forgot how to play basketball, you know, he is someone who looks like he has zero offensive confidence.
Yeah.
And especially for a player where the Timberwolves don't really need much out of him, you know, it's really concerning to me, because he's completely letting the way that he's fouling defensively, because he's looked slow, he's looked out of position, he's looked like, you know, he doesn't know how to deal with offensive physicality on the defensive end of the floor, and he's letting that totally take hold of his offensive game. And when that's happening, there's not a whole lot you can do as a coach or a coaching staff to help a player, because they're completely in their own head. You know, and it's different because he's one of those players whose defense feeds his offense. As opposed to a lot of other players, you know, if they're struggling on offense, it affects them on defense. And it's not like you can run a play for a guy to get his defensive confidence back, to get him an easy look on defense, you know? And so that's what's troubling to me, is that a lot of the guys in the back end, not the back end, but just rotation players, you know, him, Okogie, you know, Malik, you know, Torian Prince, none of those guys are earning minutes at all. Mm-hmm. And they've faced zero repercussions for that. You know, Josh Kogi's had a couple DNPs. I think Finch made the right move to bench McLaughlin. But the fact that those guys have just been going out and laying eggs on both ends of the floor, frankly, and that they're still getting minutes is tough, because you've got guys like Noel is... Noel is a certified pressure cooker offensively. Like, I feel confident that if Malik Beasley is not playing, the way that Malik Beasley can play. Like, you put Jalen Noel in there, and there's a pretty low chance that his worst is going to be worse than Malik Beasley's worst. Mm-hmm. Because Noel's a better defender than Beasley is. He can create a shot off the dribble more easily than Beasley can. And, you know, Malik's shooting 30% from three. Like, Jalen Noel, his floor is also probably 30% from three.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jim Pete made a good point last night of the broadcast that, like, Finch is good at letting guys play through their struggles. And with a guy like Malik, I think that makes sense. But when you're a Kogi or Vanderbilt or Prince or, you know, McLaughlin, and you just don't have it that night, your effort isn't there, the things that you're normally good at, you're not doing well at all. Like, he's got to have a quick hook on those guys. And so far, he's had a very, very long hook, and it's bitten the Timberwolves in the ass. And he's got to light a fire under some of these guys. And until that happens, I just don't see the Timberwolves rotation players stepping up to the plate and getting on base. I don't see it happening.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Let me take a quick break because I want to retort to that, you know, and I want to talk about the Finch and what he needs to do. Or what he can do to try to light that fire under the ass of some of these guys. So let's take a quick break for the ads, and we'll come back and talk about that. All right, we are back. You were just musing on how you can't just keep letting these guys, probably 5 to 10 in the rotation, just continue to lay eggs and to drop, you know, 3 out of 10 performances. And that's, I think, a sentiment that's been echoed around the fan base. And I think it's absolutely spot on. You've got guys on the bench that can't be worse than what Jake Layman can't be worse than what Taurean Prince is giving you right now. Jalen Noel can't be worse than what Malik Beasley is giving you right now. And frankly, you can't, like, this season will slip away if you're trying to let guys play themselves into a rhythm. At the end of the day, like, you have to force this rhythm. You have to grab this rhythm and stuff it onto the court yourself, because right now Malik Beasley isn't finding a rhythm. His shot selection is getting worse because he's trying to shoot himself back into a rhythm. I thought at the start of the season he was still playing well as a ball mover and a guy who was taking the right shots. He gets open looks all game. He would have had 4 or 5 open looks again in this game. Like, he's barely grazing rim on some of these shots. Like, he is as in a funk as you can be in. Taurean Prince has been an enormous disappointment. He doesn't even shoot threes anymore. I don't even know when the last time he attempted a three was. It's got to be at least 2 or 3 games. At least he's been kind of waning over the edge of rotation minutes. Sometimes he was a DNP coach's decision the other night. Josh Okogie and Vanderbilt are very situational guys. I actually think Okogie's been pretty good most of the season, but his obvious flaw is that he is not a good shooter. Vanderbilt, who I love, you know, listeners know I love Vanderbilt, oscillates between someone who wins you a game and someone who is almost unplayable at times. Like,
he was unplayable tonight.
Yeah. McDaniels is, like you said, just a lost puppy out there at times. I actually thought McDaniels had a decent game offensively tonight, and in garbage time he started to get things going a little bit, which is obviously pretty meaningless, but it was nice to at least see him getting some confidence back. Defensively, if he can't, he's stopped fouling the last 2 games, but he's lost a lot of his defensive kind of acumen because he needs to play physical. He's too light to not play physical. And he can't figure out, like you said, how to play physical at the moment and play physical and not pick up fouls. What do you do? If you step into Chris Finch's shoes, what are the two things that you would change heading into the next game that are kind of, you know, not things that an NBA coach would know more than us, just 2 things, surface level things that you'd change?
Yeah, I mean, so the first thing that I would do is I would ask Patrick Beverley to shoot more. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing I do, because Patrick Beverley he's obviously been very smart with his shot selection thus far this year. I think he's been a little too conservative at times, honestly. I think that there's times where, you know, he pump fakes a three and wants to shoot that three, but instead, you know, will pass it, as opposed to putting it on the deck if he's got a guy beat. Like, there was one possession tonight where he throws Zubac up in the air with a pump fake and wants to shoot a three and has a wide open driving lane, but instead passes it back out to the perimeter. Like, Patrick Beverley is a pretty decent guy with floaters, mm-hmm. shown that this year. And, you know, even if Pat Bev gets a ball on the deck, and wants to get to that floater and the defense respects it, you know, he can make a dump off pass or kick it to the opposite wing. Like, he's got to be more assertive, because he's somebody whose offense has been there this year. Like, when he's looked for it, it has been there. And then the second thing that I would do is I would really focus on getting the big three playing in their, you know, comfort positions and in their comfort situations. So I wrote this in the preview for tonight's game, but I would really like to see a lot more high ball screen action for Anthony Edwards.
Yeah.
We've seen so few ball screens for Anthony Edwards this year. And that's a really big problem, because you can't just rely on Anthony Edwards to get downhill one-on-one every single time he touches the ball. Like, that's just not sustainable. Ant is so goddamn good that, like, the other night in the Warriors game, like, he was able to do that. But you can't expect that, you know, every night, every other night, whatever it is. And when you do that, it allows Cat to make the decision of whether he wants to pop out or whether he wants to roll, because he's just as good in either situation. And it allows Edwards to make simple reads, whether to throw the ball back out to Cat or not, whether to continue to get down and attack. And then if you have D'Angelo Russell on the strong side wing or in the corner, you know, that's like a layup for him. If the defense, you know, cheats in on Ant and he's wide open, that's a layup for him. And those three situations for each player, with Ant driving Cat in spot up on the perimeter where he can shoot it or pump and go, and then D'Angelo Russell in catch and shoot situations, like, that's the best way that you can harmonize the three of them at the same time. And is it tough that, you know, you have a max player as a catch and shoot guy in some situations and D'Angelo Russell? Like, yeah, sure. That's, you know, unfortunate, but only one player can have the ball at a time. And in my opinion, D'Angelo Russell is one of the best spot up and catch and shoot guys, not just on the Timberwolves, but in the entire league.
And every time he's looked good this season, it's been when he's caught fire from three, and most of those times the spark has been ignited by getting a couple of catch and shoot opportunities.
Absolutely.
I love the idea. I think that they need it. Like, talking of Cat as a screener, I think it should be roles. I want Cat to shoot threes, and I think he should shoot threes. I wrote the other day about it, and he's popping on 64% of his after his screens, rolling on 36. That would be,
where is that from, by the way?
Basketball Index on their player profiles.
Okay.
Sweet. I almost want to flip that. I think when there's just so little rim pressure on this team that getting Cat moving downhill, Nas, I think Ant and Nas work really well together because Nas is just diving so hard. And then you can use Cat as a short roll passer as well, which again opens up D'Lo. I think Ant has become really good at pocket passing from the perimeter, kind of not on the move. If Cat just comes in, the defense tries to trap or hedge Ant, and he can just slide it through that gap to Cat, and then Cat will inevitably collapse any defense. If Cat gets into 2 feet in the paint, he collapses the defense, especially when he's doing it on the move and not in a back down post up situation. That's definitely a thing I want to see more of. That you see it with Nas on the court. I think it's more of a choice from Cat to shoot threes, which is not a bad choice. I want to get that across, because Cat should be shooting threes. Like, he should never post up.
He should be shooting 10 threes a game.
He should never post up. I don't want to see him post up at all throughout a game. Like, I genuinely don't want to see it ever again. That's like, they went, the only time is if they're, like you said, if they're going to do it at the nail, like, and he can face up quickly and make, because they don't double, you can't double from the nail. There's just too much space in behind that to double consistently at the nail. when he's on the block, it's just so easy to double him out of the game. He's not making decisions quick enough. And he can't
move guards when guards are on his back.
His lower body strength is just completely shot, and it was never good to begin with. So I want to see him as a role man, and definitely, like you said, if he's not rolling, at least just play pick and pop. Like, I just want to see high ball screens for Ant, high ball screens for D'Lo when he's got the ball. D'Lo more as a shooter. I think that's all spot on. Malik Beasley shouldn't play next game. I just don't think he should play next game. I don't think you just shelve him for the rest of the season, but, like, something's got to give. I thought he was awful defensively in this game. I thought he'd been better this season, but I thought he was just absolutely awful on defense. I think Noel, like you said, is better defensively. Give Jake Layman some minutes. Just throw some shit at the wall and hope that it sticks, because right now it's just shit sitting there in a pile.
I disagree that Malik just shouldn't play. I don't think that would help the situation with him shooting and his offensive struggles.
I do get that.
I think shortening the leash, I'm fine with, but just taking a guy like Malik Beasley and benching him completely, and this is coming from somebody that is all in on the Jalen Noel train, that is conducting the Jalen Noel train. And I still think that, like, Malik Beasley is so talented as a shooter that if he sees his first one go in or his second one go in, like, he could see his next three or four go in. And I just, you know, if he's just terrible for, like, the first 5 minutes of his time out there, then yeah, like, give him a hook and you know, try and light a fire under his ass. But I don't know. I just completely taking a guy that has the potential to be such a big part of the rotation like he does. He's not a guy that I'd feel comfortable completely taking out. But, like, you know, I definitely do think that we're at the point of the season where, like, you've got to let it rip.
Yeah.
Like,
your point there, because, like, Beasley's never getting back. And, like, if you take him out of the rotation, how long do you leave him out? If you take him out and Noel plays well, do you sit Beasley for the rest of the season? That's not feasible at all, really, is it? So,
and it's not like you're practicing enough where, like, you'd know, okay, he's making more shots in practice, like, we'll put him in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's like last year with Jaden McDaniels. Like, Jaden McDaniels started playing more because the Timberwolves were getting blown out, and the coaching staff was like, oh, wait, shit, we might have something here. And slowly but surely, they started creeping him up into the rotation, and you know, he was starting. And I feel like either with Jalen Noel or Leandro Bolmaro, like, those are two guys where you got to start giving them, like, a 3-minute spurt here or a 4-minute spurt there, and just seeing what you have. If that 4-minute spurt loses you the game, then so be it. You're already 4-8. You're already behind the 8-ball. You already have a lot of rotation guys that are not playing well, and you just cannot keep the status quo. I don't necessarily think that the Wolves are in any type of position to make a trade right now. Especially for someone like Ben Simmons, because the three biggest pieces they'd use in a trade on each of their players, you know, contextualized standards have been awful so far this season between D'Lo, Malik, and Jaden McDaniels. And this team cannot afford to trade Patrick Beverley right now, or, you know, trade Patrick Beverley and D'Lo and Jaden or something like they just can't do that. And then also cough up a bunch of first round picks. So they're just between a rock and a hard place. And I feel like the best way to proceed from here is put the guys that you know can produce in the positions where they produce the most efficiently and the most effectively with Kat, D'Lo, and Ant. And then with the rotation guys that aren't playing very well, you got to show that there are consequences for playing really poor basketball. And to me, that's giving guys like Noel and Bolmaro a 3-4 minute stint there, or, you know, shit, a Nathan Knight 2 minutes here and there. Just anything to try and infuse the team with, or excuse me, not Nathan Knight, Jake Layman, you know, 2 minutes here or there. You know, something's got to change. And don't think that the attitudes of the players that are playing poorly right now are going to improve unless you do something to directly challenge them.
Yeah, I agree on all fronts. And I liked what you said about like these 3-minute stints that you speak of. It doesn't, like, the team is losing, man. Tonight, there was no reason why Bolmaro shouldn't have got 5 minutes tonight in the third quarter. There's just no reason why. There's no reason why Noel shouldn't have got minutes in other games where the offense was just completely falling apart. He's what, one of three guys on the roster that can create their own shot? Like, which is just a recipe for disaster in itself. And even the shots that D'Lo is creating have been really tough looks. And when he's not in a rhythm, those really tough looks kind of are really tough to stomach him shooting. I know that's his game. It's Russell's game. And he takes those hard shots. And when he's playing well, he hits those hard shots. But right now, he isn't more often than not. So, like you said, you want to get him cleaner looks. You want to get him off the ball. You want to do all these things. But at the end of the day, if the guys that aren't Ant, Cat, and D'Lo aren't playing well, they're not good enough to have a cemented place on this roster or in this rotation, and not one that can't be overtaken by Bolmaro or by Noel. And letting them figure it, if you let them figure out for another 15 games before you go to one of these guys and you try something else, the season's probably going to be over, or it's going to be fully turned around. There seems to be no in between. I'm really, how, because we're hitting on it, how do you think Chris Finch is doing? Because he's truly between a rock and a hard place, but there's criticism that needs to go his way as well. But how much do you blame him? How much do you blame the roster construction? Like, what's your kind of ratio there?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. Like, I mean, you would know better than I would in terms of, like, exactly specifically with what actions he's running, how, you know, how well he's doing with dialing up play calls and the frequency at which those plays are being dialed up. You know, it felt like last year there was a much more evident kind of like scheming advantage that Finch showed, where like he was doing such a good job of getting guys in their spots and helping to get them going that way. You know, I think we saw way more two-man action with Cat and Ant last year that we just aren't seeing this year. And I think he did so much more to get D'Angelo Russell open off the ball when he was playing alongside of McLaughlin, or Ant kind of assumed more of the point guard role. And we just haven't seen that. I think D'Lo is just such a good off the ball player that he's just kind of flowed into empty spots and made it work. But I just think that for my money, what I've seen, it feels like there are so many simple, repeatable actions with Cat, Ant, and D'Lo that you can get to. And there are far too many times where the Timberwolves are just trying to force feed Cat in the mid post and he's fighting for position until there's 15 seconds left on the shot clock or 14 seconds left on the shot clock. And then he gets the ball, gets doubled. All of a sudden there's 6 seconds left on the shot clock and there's no possession to be made out of that. And I think, you know, Finch kind of alluded to it, saying that Cat needed to be cleaner and quicker in the post. And, you know, hopefully that means that, like, you be cleaner and quicker in the post or I'm going to stop calling plays for you to be in the post. But man, I mean, with his rotation, like, I'm not really mad about his rotation all that much. Like, outside of what I mentioned with, like, giving guys, you know, 3-4 minutes here and there to throw something out there. But and defensively, I think he's been fine. Like, I think when he's gone to zones or switched up defenses has been fine. It's just that they've been so bad at those other defenses that, like, it makes you look worse. Yeah, man. But my biggest gripe has been not getting Ant and Cat involved in a two-man game enough, not getting Ant enough high ball screens, and not running enough action for D'Angelo Russell as a shooter off the ball. And yeah, if those three things happen, I'd be much happier. I think this offense would be at least a little bit better. You know, I'm not a tactician. I'm trying to learn as much as I can, but like not going to sit here and act like I know everything about it. And just for my money, that's what I think you can improve on.
Yeah, I agree. I'm still a pretty big Finch guy, but some of the decisions, I think, as the season's worn on, have been pretty maddening. The post-up shit needs to stop. Like I said before, I just don't see the benefit of it. Like, even at its best, post-ups aren't really good, you know, points per possession plays. I get the thinking is that you want to play out of the post so you can get those high points per possession plays, you know, be it open threes or cuts to the rim. But they haven't been there.
But this team doesn't cut.
They don't cut at all. They don't move. I don't know how much of it... Like, that's what I find hard deciphering, is, like, how much of it is just Finch kind of shitting the bed at times, and how much is it is Anthony Edwards not cutting when he could? Is it Jaden McDaniels, I feel like, has cut 70% less than he did last season? Russell, I haven't seen him run one kind of really good action for Russell as an off-ball shooter, but he runs them for Beasley and Prince a lot. Beasley, by far, gets the best actions run for him on the team, in my opinion. Beasley gets really nice, you know, screening actions and coming off the baseline, off exit screens into the corner. Like, he's just clanging the shots. I'd like to see Russell get some of those. I don't know if Russell's just unwilling to kind of sprint around the same way that Beasley is, because he's a...
He's willing to. He did it a ton in Golden State.
That's why it confuses me, because he doesn't get any... No one does. They don't run any plays to get McDaniels open threes, which I know he hasn't shot the ball well, but, like, running something to maybe help him shoot the ball well, you know, is something that I would try. The Cat gets the occasional play ran for him, like you said, but most of it's just post-ups. There's a lot of good first actions, I think, from Finch. You know, they run really cool pin-down actions where they kind of twirl around pin-downs and come out the other side. But then after the player gets the ball, if the shot isn't there, it's just been nothing. That's what I really went deep into that Grizzlies game, where the offense just completely shit itself at the end of the game. And there was more than I even laid out in the article I did, but there was at least 10, 15 really nice first actions in that run that Memphis went on. And all of them either were defended really well, or someone made an error, someone didn't shoot when they probably should have, someone didn't make the right read. But then it's nothing. After that first action, whether it's pin downs or horns actions, you know, or screens coming off the baseline, that they're all fine, and they're fine when they get a shot for you, but when shit hits the fan on those, you know, sets and actions, it's nothing after that. And I just feel like that wasn't like it was last season. Like I said, I still think Finch is the guy, and I would be shocked if they fired him. They definitely should be not be they firing won't. Any coaches. Like, I don't think they're even close to that, and I'm not close to that, but I don't know. It just feels like the whole team... It's just, like I said earlier, it just feels like disconnect at the moment. And it feels that way offensively, mainly.
Yeah, I definitely feel like there's a disconnect. And I don't know if it's... I don't know what it is, honestly. Because they looked so good with no practice time last season. And I think that's what's the most frustrating thing about it, is because, you know, you look at the Timberwolves, like, you look at the Timberwolves last season, they were better in half-court points per play, points per 100 plays by almost 10 points. Like, that's pretty significant.
That's massive.
Granted, a lot of half-court offense is down this year considerably because of fouls and shooting. But that 10 point difference is only like a four ranking difference from 24th to 28th. But still, man, like, I think when you look at transition, like, you know, the Timberwolves are sixth in transition opportunities. You know, they have a ton of live ball steals, which is great. But even with that, like, they're still not able to convert those into points enough. And when that's happening, like, that's just really tough when your defense is based on creating those opportunities. And when you get those opportunities, you're not able to do anything with them. That's tough. And then on the flip side, if you're, you know, getting beat, you know, you're getting beat in transition, like that's really tough.
They got smacked in the mouth in transition again tonight. Like the transition defense kind of waxes and wanes between okay and just downright terrible. But there's some things like that's why I think it's so hard. It's so hard to judge Finch is because there's things he's not doing well. Things he's kind of tried to tweak that have gone pretty badly. I think so far, comparative to last year, and then things that he just can't control. Like, I bet he would have laughed at you if you told him that Malik Beasley would be shooting 30% from the field from, you know, through 12 games, couldn't hit a three to save his life. That Taurean Prince, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he's got to be shooting less than 20% from three. McDaniels would be under 30. Like,
what do you think Taurean Prince is shooting, like, number out of number and percent? What's your guess?
I would say probably like 6 out of 23, which I don't know what the percentage of that is. I'm not good at maths, but I feel like he has not hit more than 6 threes. Do you have it in there in front of you?
I thought I did. Where'd it go? Okay, yeah, I do have it. He's 4 for 24, 16.7%.
16.7.
You're pretty close. I was trying to find the page. I knew I had like, had it.
This
up
is
earlier,
a 40% guy consistently over years of sample size.
And I will say that I do think like people are throwing the ball out there as an excuse, but the ball is undoubtedly a huge factor for some guys more than others.
Yeah.
Like Damian Lillard, like that brother cannot shoot the ball to save his life right now. And it's not because Damian Lillard is not a good basketball player. Damian Lillard forgot how to shoot. Like, same thing with Malik Beasley. Like, I wouldn't, like, well, Malik's more mechanics, but like, there are some guys I think that are struggling with the ball more than others. It's like when you go and play pickup at the gym, like, you may like one ball way more than another, and it's a huge difference.
Yeah.
And, I don't know what else to say about it. Like, you know, I do think that a lot of these Timberwolves threes are like being created by a possession that goes nowhere for the first 15 seconds. And then they just make one pass for three. And some guy's like, oh, fuck it, I'll shoot this.
Yeah.
And it's just not a good shot. But even when the Timberwolves are like running actions, like you were saying, for Prince or Beasley to get good looks on open threes, like it just doesn't feel like a lot of them have been going in. Whereas like you contrast that to tonight. You can contrast that to tonight, and the Clippers make every open three. Like, it's just crazy.
And it just seems so inevitable as well that the threes are going to go in against the Timberwolves. Like, it was so surprising that Melo kept missing those threes.
I know. That was kind of so satisfying to see, though.
Oh, and it's just like, Finch must just be face-palming. Like, what can I do here? Like, when I do draw up this awesome play, when I do get Cat in the post against the guy who's 7 inches smaller than him, you know, it goes awry. And then D'Angelo Russell dribbles the ball off his foot three times a game. Like, Anthony Edwards...
That's pissing me off.
Yeah,
that's
Anthony Edwards doesn't get a call at the rim. Like, he was heated tonight about Ant not getting a call at the rim. Carl Anthony Towns comes out with no energy. Like, there's nothing he can do about that. I know that people say, well, you know, it's a coach's job to fire these guys up, and that's bullshit, man. It's their job to fire themselves up. Like, this is what they do. And if they love the game like they claim they do, this is like, you can't just sleepwalk into games. And Finch must just be thinking, what the fuck can I do here? Like, there's, like I said, there's things he can do better, but there's a lot of things where it's just, he can't do anything but trust that his guys are going to do what they're supposed to, and they're not.
Yeah, no, I agree with that completely. I mean, it must be a pretty helpless feeling for him knowing that, like, it feels like every other team that plays the Timberwolves has such an easier job in the paint than the Timberwolves do.
Yeah.
Where, like, it feels like every single time another team gets the ball in deep, it's a point. Whereas, like, with the Timberwolves, if they get the ball in deep, it's like, all right, we're not going to get a call. you know? And I feel like the Timberwolves have that attitude as a team. Like, we have it as fans, obviously, but I feel like the Timberwolves feel that way as a team also.
Yeah.
Like, they're going up weak trying to draw a foul instead of going up strong with the attitude, I don't care who the hell is going to hit me, I'm scoring the ball. Whereas, like, the Timberwolves are going up with a, I hope I get fouled
yeah.
mindset.
And then, too, the Ant does that as well. Ant does that, and then I think Ant, like, tonight in this game, it gets to, you know, the third quarter, and I think he realizes, like, I'm just not getting a call, and I think he hits three or four layups in that third quarter where it's just like, I'm just going to fucking score then because they're not going to call a foul. But that needs to be from minute one. Score the ball and let the refs do whatever the refs are going to do. Because, like, Cat as well, like, you just need to put pressure on the refs. You're not putting pressure on the refs by baiting them. Put pressure on the refs by scoring consistently and, you know, dunking on dudes and going up strong because that's what you can do. Like, we've seen these guys do it, and right now they're not consistently enough anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's been one of the most frustrating things, and I think the most frustrating things is there have been countless times where the Timberwolves have had four guys around the rim, the other team has had one offensive rebounder in, and the offensive rebounder has gotten a rebound.
Yeah.
Like, that shit just cannot happen. And the other thing, too, is, like, I'm looking at the Golden State roster before the Golden State game. Like, Golden State, much like the Timberwolves, have only two guys that are bigger than 6'8", that, like, actually play. And the Timberwolves have a 7-foot guy. The Warriors do not. And the Warriors are, like, the Warriors are top five in rebounding, and the Timberwolves are bottom five in rebounding.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is an effort component to this.
Yeah.
That the Timberwolves just do not have. And I'm not saying everybody has to be like Jared Vanderbilt, where, like, they feel like their life is on the line every time they're going for a rebound. But, like, there's no reason Anthony Edwards cannot consistently average 7 rebounds a night. There's no reason why, like, shit, I don't know, D'Angelo Russell can't average 5-6 rebounds a night. Like, he's 6'5". And to his credit, he's done a much better job rebounding this year, I think, D'Lo has, because he wants to get the ball and get out and run, which is helpful. But, like, you know, like, Cat is just getting thrown around on the defensive end, but he's doing so well rebounding on the offensive end. Like, it's just the Timberwolves are such a weird team when it comes to rebounding, and I just don't know what the solution there is. I don't know what they can do to infuse the team with more rebounding other than, like, tell Jaden McDaniels, like, I'm not playing your ass unless you start getting 5-6 rebounds a game. Like, yeah. I just don't know what they can do.
There isn't anything. Like, they don't. It's another thing that
Finch I'm saying from, like, an effort standpoint. Yeah. Like, I don't know what the coaching staff can do to be like, exactly. You need to rebound. Exactly.
That's what I was going to say. Is that Finch? It's another thing that Finch must just throw his hands in the air. Like, first of all, I don't get given anyone who can rebound, anyone who's tall enough. And then on the nights where I should win this rebound battle anyway, guys aren't boxing out. Like, Anthony Edwards doesn't box out ever. He can sky in and get rebounds, and he does more than he was last season. But, like, he's not boxing out for other dudes. Cat is just, like you said, just getting out-muscled at every point of a game where there's a battle for position in any variety, whether it's rebounding, post position, you know, all that stuff. Cat's getting worked. The concerning thing, like you said, is that when there's a chance to score a bucket yourself, when it's go in and grab an offensive rebound, everybody wants to do it. When it's grab a defensive rebound or box someone out or turn around and just watch where the guy on the perimeter is so he doesn't sky in and grab one for the opposition, nobody's interested except Vanderbilt and Beverly. They're pretty much the only two guys that do it. And Bev is, what, 6'2"? You know, like, he puts in just as much effort as anyone on the team to get a rebound. And sometimes I think Cat is... it's unfair on him because sometimes he's just... like, swarmed by guys who were taller than him. But in games like the Golden State game, Kevon Looney cannot get 12 rebounds, offensive rebounds against you. 12. Like, no. Not ever. Not today, not ever. And Cat has, you know, I don't know what it was, but something, two defensive rebounds or something. And you know, even tonight he had less than 10 again. He's averaging less than 10 for the season. And I think that all just kind of circles back around to what we started this conversation with, was that his body language and his energy seems off. And rebounding is effort and body language and energy. It's all those things. It's going and grabbing that fucking ball. Like, and it's definitely one of those things that Finch must just think, what can I do? Like, I can't get guys to hit open shots. I can't get guys to grab rebounds. I can't get guys to, you know, come in and expect to win on nights where, you know, they've won a game beforehand. I can't get guys to get into this mentality that one win isn't enough to take a victory lap. And that's pretty much where they're at right now. And it's annoying to watch, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, and if you look at the Timberwolves' schedule, like, it's not like things get a whole lot easier for them, mm-hmm. honestly. Like,
the Suns might wipe the floor with them next game. It's the next
game. I mean, if DeAndre Ayton's out, like, that is a must-win game.
And it's so a must. Play Phoenix, it's a must-cat game. You have to go out there and play well if you line up on Frank Kaminsky. If Frank Kaminsky pockets you, like, warning bells are dinging loud and clear.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so you play the Suns, who the Wolves played well against the Suns last year anyways. You know, you had the 40-40 game with Cat and Ant last year, which was fucking electric. So, you know, that's a schedule. Let's schedule that as a loss. I mean, but then you have Sacramento that's lost four in a row. San Antonio, who for my money is the worst team in the NBA. Then Memphis, who lost to the Pelicans tonight. And got absolutely throttled the other night by...
And should have lost to Minnesota in that game.
Yeah, like
you can beat them.
The Grizzlies have lost 4 of 5. It should be 5 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, the Timberwolves play at New Orleans, against Miami, at Charlotte, at Philly. Like, and then your schedule starts to get really tough after that. So you have five games now to right the ship. And four of them are at home, and then the fifth one is at New Orleans, where you will not have, again, you won't have Zion Williamson in all likelihood. Or you'll have Zion that's like just barely gotten back into the rotation. And then after that, you play Miami, Charlotte, Philadelphia, Indiana, Washington, Brooklyn, Atlanta, Utah, Cleveland, Portland, Denver.
Right now, it feels like they will not win.
There is one team. There is one team in there. Maybe two. No. Yeah, there is one team out of that group that is currently not slated to be in the playoffs, and that's Indiana, who has been the most injured team on the face of the earth for like the last 16 months. So, I mean, the Timberwolves have a murderer's row schedule from Thanksgiving to the first of the year. And then the first of the year, it gets somewhat easy again,
but by that stage you can't let like the easy schedule won't matter by that stage if you roll into that at 10 and or 8 and you know 20. Yeah, it doesn't matter by that time. It just won't matter.
My point is, like, the start of this season, they've had so many opportunities to be better than they have been. And they've blown leads in almost every single one of the games that they've lost. Almost a double-digit lead in almost every game, too. Which is just frustrating, man. And it's like, all these next five are against Western Conference teams, too. Like, that's where you've got to make your mark. And, like, mm-hmm. you got an opportunity to step up to the plate and, like, embrace the challenge, or you can just turtle. And, like, I'm expecting the team to turtle, honestly. They just don't have enough. They don't have enough personalities on the team that are like, "Hey, like, I'm sick of this shit. Like, I'm gonna go out. I'm gonna show up every night. I'm gonna lead by example. I'm gonna MF people if they're dogging it. If you know they look like they don't want to be here, I'm gonna yell at the coach to take this guy out of the game if he's dogging it. Like, if I'm a player, I'd be like, I don't want to play with anybody that's dogging it. Like in Pat Bev, like, you know, Pat Bev's been back and forth. Like after Ant had that crazy third quarter in the New Orleans game when they lost, he was like, he literally said after the game, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
And then tonight you have him saying after the game that, like, you got to stay positive no matter what. It's like, pick a side. You can't be all over the place. Like,
Pat Bev seems to be getting Minnesota'd at the moment, just Timberwolves. He doesn't seem like, and I don't think he'll ever not have a bunch of energy, but he just seems like that first few games, Pat Beverly isn't there at the moment. And he was great in the Lakers game. I thought he started the whole.
He did. The third quarter, he was awesome.
And he's always going to have more energy than most guys on the court. But I fear that, you know, he'll just kind of sink into, well, this is my last year of my contract. Like, this team's going nowhere. I'm still going to be Pat Bev, but I'm not going to be able to kind of impact the game, you know, mind state-wise in this locker room the way Pat Bev can in other locker rooms. And that's just an indictment on every single person that's around him, as well as probably him. So, I don't know, man. Like you said, we're both gamblers. The smart money is at the Wolves' turtle, like you said. You'd be silly to bet that they're going to just turn it on all of a sudden and become this, you know, juggernaut franchise that can, like win five games in a row and get themselves, turn this thing around completely. So, I don't know. That's what I'm hoping for. That's what we'll be tuning in still for. But right now, it's they're pushing shit up a hill right now, and it's falling back down on them over and over.
Yeah, man, it's frustrating. It is certainly frustrating, and I think what makes it really difficult is that, you know, like this team doesn't have like a point where they can look back at and be like, we've done this before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only thing they look back on is more losses, more losing streaks. That's the only thing that's kind of there as muscle memory.
Yeah, and it's really tough, especially for someone like Anthony Edwards, who is being baptized into you know, the shit pit. Yeah. Like it just is frustrating. And as to where the Timberwolves go from here, it's like they got an opportunity to look in the mirror and fix things and be 500. Or, you know, a couple games below 500. Like, if they come out of that stretch a couple games below 500, like, I'm okay. Like, yeah. You know what? They can, yeah. You know, they can steal a game here or there. You know, they have to inject some confidence into what they're doing. And you know, I think it's obviously more likely that you come out and lay an egg on the road than you would at home. But, like, those games, I've been at, you know, three games now at Target Center. And, like, that crowd, it wants so badly for this team to be good and to have a reason to go and be loud and obnoxious and have a ton of energy. And nights like tonight, where Karl Anthony Towns has zero interest in being a basketball player, just does nothing to help. And the Timberwolves' best chance of righting this ship is winning games at home that they are not supposed to win. And it's going to be harder to do that if you start laying eggs on the road and fans start to get disinterested.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We'll leave it at that. I think that's a perfect kind of outro there. Thank you for giving me your time. It's late over there. We're recording after the Clippers game. So I appreciate you, Jack. Obviously, go over to Kansas Supers. Jack is always doing great work there. He's kind of sprinkled a few mentions in the stuff he's doing, but if you go there, you will find all of his stuff and all of those other great guys over at Canis stuff. So Jack, thank you for the therapy session, and hopefully we can do this on brighter terms within the next few weeks.
Absolutely, man. Always look forward to it, and glad you guys are out of lockdown and
yes,
and jabbed up and ready to roll down there down there in Australia. I'm happy for you guys.
Thank you, man. And everyone else, thanks for listening. Thanks for sticking by. And thank you for subscribing over at housanddrowse.substack. I know that I'm not expecting many people to pay me right now for Timberwolves content, but everyone who has and everyone who continues to, thank you. And I will be back next week. Peace.